This is the Rental Income Podcast, where we talk to owners of rental properties and give you actionable tips and advice that will help you make more money while dealing with less hassle. And now your host, Dan Lane.
I put together a list of 7 things I wish I knew earlier about renting properties, and you can download your free copy. Just go to my website, freelandlordgift.com. On the show today, we have John Malatesta. John owns 3 rental properties, and he's also a full-time professional property manager. He's going to tell us about the top 5 pitfalls that can get rental property owners in trouble. So I'm really excited to hear what they are. So, John, why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in real estate?
I really got started in real estate after I got out of the military. I didn't really know where I wanted to go, so I started investing in real estate with a partner, my father, actually, at the time, and did really well. We did quite a few residential flipping, and that was back in 2005, 2006, so we had good heydays. Mm-hmm. But then everything kind of went south, so I needed to figure out what else I could do. Still always wanted to be investing, but I did have to take more or less a normal job. Okay. But I still was an investor because I still had my rental portfolio. And after 2010, 2012 timeframe, I was overseas. And after I got done with that, I definitely wanted to get back into investing. And one way that I knew very easily is to manage properties. So that's kind of where the idea came to open up a property management business for other people, and it's been fun and haven't looked back since.
Today on the podcast, I want to talk about the top 5 pitfalls that can get a rental property owner in trouble. And I think that you're going to bring a real interesting perspective to this because you are a property manager and you work with a lot of properties. So because of that, you see a lot of different issues and you see a lot of crazy things that can come up or things that can go wrong. So why don't we start with number 5? So what is the number 5 pitfall that can get a rental property owner in trouble?
So I would probably have to say not having the proper insurance coverages for your rental home. Since it's not your primary residence, you need landlord insurance policy, not homeowner's insurance policy.
That's a real good one that I think maybe a lot of people don't know. So if you were, say, living in the house and then you decide you're going to turn it into a rental, you can't just keep the same policy. You've got to actually call your agent and get a landlord policy.
Correct. Okay. And there's 3 possibilities of which if you do not change your insurance, and then let's say you have a claim, a tree falls on your roof or something crazy. Worst case scenario is they say, well, not paying the claim and you were fraudulent in your insurance and we're suing you. And you're still going to be out of pocket for whatever damages were done.
Wow.
Middle case scenario is they go, well, we're not going to pay the claim, and but we'll go ahead and keep you insured for any other claims. Let's just go ahead and get you converted to the right one. Best case scenario, which probably happens maybe 5 to 10% of the time, is that they say, we understand it was just an oversight. We'll go ahead and pay the claim. Your deductible is going to go up a little bit. Your insurance rate, monthly rate will go up a little bit, but we'll go ahead and get you switched over to the proper claim. And that's an insurance company that's looking out for you versus just being an insurance company.
With the landlord policy, what other coverages are you getting that you wouldn't be getting as a regular homeowner?
So as a regular homeowner, regular homeowner's insurance covers you because you live in the home, you're there day to day, and they have a certain expectation of you taking care of the property. Mm-hmm. Landlord insurance covers the structure of the property, pipes, things of that nature, busting, HVAC, if it explodes for whatever reason, that can be covered on your landlord insurance policy. But because you are not living there anymore, if you have a homeowner's insurance policy, none of those things are covered. It would be trying to insure your home with automobile insurance. It just doesn't cover
okay.
it. It's just not apples and apples.
What happens if, say, the tenant slips and falls and it ends up that it's the fault of the owner for whatever reason, something wasn't maintained properly? Does the owner have any kind of liability insurance?
Yes. Well, okay. That's why you get landlord policies. Okay. Because there is a liability coverage in there of X amount, you know, $100,000, $1 million, whatever that coverage is. There will be a liability similar to your automobile insurance. You'll have a general insurance that will cover the dents and dings of a accident, and then you'll have liability for any medical bills or anything like that.
Okay, I got it. What's the number four pitfall?
I would say not having it set up properly in the legal sense of not having it in an LLC, not having it in some sort of corporation to protect you as the owner and your personal belongings and your personal accounts.
Okay. So how does an LLC protect you as, you know, I understand, you know, you're not an attorney and you're not giving us legal advice, but in general, how would an LLC protect an owner?
There are people that will buy a property in their own name and they're living in it, no big deal. Then they want to turn it into a rental portfolio. Usually with one or two, it's not much of a problem. But when you actually start growing your rental portfolio beyond three or four, you really need to put it in an LLC in case somebody slips and falls, in case you're having some roof work done, just maintaining the property, and the construction company falls off the roof. Mm. Maybe somebody drives through the house. I've actually seen that where they hit ice on the road and just crashed into the house. If you're not in an LLC, you personally as the owner can be sought after for damages and grievances and such. You can basically, you as a person can be sued.
Okay.
If you have it in an LLC, that LLC can be sued. And so you get a lot more coverage on your personal side. So if you have, let's say, five rental properties and your house, and you have each one in its own LLC or corporation or however you structure it, and something happens at one of your properties, the other four investments are typically sheltered, and then your own house that you live in is sheltered as well from any ramifications or liabilities, not liabilities, suits that might be brought after you.
Okay. Would you say that you're better off putting each property in a different LLC?
Or on a personal level, I would say yes.
Okay.
LLCs in Virginia cost about $100 a year, not very expensive, and it is a write-off because it's a business. But I know people that will do 3, 4, 5 in one LLC. It just depends on your risk level and your risk tolerance, what you're comfortable with.
You know, that's a good point too, because I know in Virginia it is pretty cheap, but other states, like I think in California, it's like $1,000 a year. So, you know, at that point, when you're paying $1,000 a year, is it maybe worth the risk? And I guess that's something everyone's got to decide on their own to see if that's worth it.
It's your risk to reward ratio that you have to perform your own analysis on. And if it's $1,000 a year, I probably wouldn't suggest each property in its own LLC. I would probably say 10.
Right.
Because then it's a lot more financially sound to do it that way. But if it's fairly inexpensive in your state or in your region, I would try to have as few in an LLC as possible.
Okay. All right. Number three
would probably have to say not understanding fair housing rules and laws.
That's another good one. So what are some of the big ones that we should watch out for?
One of the new ones in 2013 and 2014 that a lot of people got in a little bit of trouble for was service animals. So somebody is going through PTSD or battling depression or any other illness. They can have a service animal that will help them, you know, combat depression or anything else that they might be going through. It's usually a dog, a cat, something along those lines. But any animal that you can legally own can be classified as a service animal. A snake, a horse, you know, it would be perfectly fine to have a snake be your service animal or a cat be your service animal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think, oh, service animal is a seeing eye dog or the dogs that help people that have seizures and warn them when they're going to have seizures. That is true, but there's a lot more classifications to them than just those few. And with that, once it is a service animal, it is more or less a child of the family and it's not a pet. There's no security deposit extra that you can charge. You cannot charge an additional pet rent. And you cannot deny them for having the pet.
Let's say hypothetically you have a property and you don't want to accept animals. You have a tenant apply and they say, my animal is a service animal. How do they prove that? Like what kind of documentation do they have to give you to prove that this is an actual certified service animal and not just the family pet?
Absolutely. Yeah, they do have to have the certification and the proper documentation. And of course, you can call the doctor's office or the entity that issued the service animal license and say, is this a service animal? And they'll verify it, which you should do, of course. But after that point, there is nothing that you can really do to deny the animal.
When you're advertising a unit, can you legally put no pets in the ad and not have that violate the fair housing laws, because you are going to accept pets if they're service animals?
No, no pets is fine. Pets are not classified under any state that I know of where as a protected class.
Okay.
Or a protected item.
Okay, that's an important distinction to make. So dogs would fit into two categories. So you have a dog that's a pet and you have a dog that's a service animal. And if it's a service animal, it's not considered a pet. It's a service animal, right?
In the eyes of the Fair Housing Board, they don't view a pet as the same as a service animal. Even though your German Shepherd dog is your pet or your German Shepherd dog is your service animal, they view them as completely separate entities.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Pets right, that's are good. Fine. I have plenty of owners that say no pets, and that's fine.
And so you got to be careful. You can't take an extra deposit. You can't charge them extra pet rent.
Nope. Okay. Can't do any of that.
Okay. Yep. All right. Number two.
I would probably have to say number two is, after you get through the legal parts and all that, is the day-to-day, not knowing how to run a credit report or what to look for when you get the credit report.
What are some key things to look for in the credit report?
Well, the big red flags are obviously any evictions or foreclosures, bankruptcies, and they stay on your records for a long, long time. The other things that a lot of people don't pay too much attention to is they'll look at the overall credit score and say, oh, hey, they've got a 700. This is great. But then they don't dig into the actual report and say, okay, yeah, sure, they have a great credit score, but they also have a monthly obligation for all their credit cards and their automobile loan and their student loan and other loans that they might have taken out of a lot. Mm-hmm. And then when you add the rent in, it's like, oh, you can't actually afford this.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So digging into the report is very important.
What's a good benchmark to use to make sure that they can afford to live in the property?
So we use a rule of thumb that I tell any tenants that are going to apply is you should times the rent by 40.
Okay.
And if that is your yearly income, typically you'll be okay. We will run what's called a back end ratio though. So case example would be, let's say your rent's $1,000. As long as you're making $40,000, $50,000 a year, historically speaking, they'll be able to pay their lights, the rent, the water, all the other things, maybe go out on a date every once in a while and be able to save.
Okay.
So, but that's a real quick rule of thumb. And we'll self-eliminate people where you're looking at, oh, I only make $30,000 and I need to make $40,000. I won't put an application in because I know I won't get approved. Mm-hmm. But then once they go, oh yeah, I make plenty, I'm good. Then you get the actual application, you add up all of their liabilities on a monthly basis, car note, student loan, whatever, and then you add the rent. And that will give you their monthly obligation that they have to pay and just what they owe every single month. You then divide that by their gross monthly income. Easy math, let's say they make $5,000 a month, but they have a monthly obligation of $2,500 a month. That means their back end ratio is 50%. Anything under 40% will approve.
Okay.
Yeah, anything over 45%, we will not approve.
Okay.
The artwork of applications comes in between 40 and 45%. If somebody is 42, 43%, but their only obligation is their rent, they'll probably be okay.
For an applicant that has, say, an 800 credit score, they have maybe a ton of debt, but they've always made their payments on time. They've maybe never had a late payment in their entire life. why would you question that maybe they wouldn't pay their rent on time when they have such a great track record?
And maybe it's not the rent that they won't miss. Maybe it's their car note. Maybe it's the light bill or the water bill or credit card bill this month or maybe next month. And as a company and as a person, I don't want to put a tenant in a place where I don't know if they're going to be able to afford it. Because then I would just feel bad myself.
You know, that's a good point. I guess it's really, it's our job as rental property owners and managers to tell the tenant what they can afford. They might not know what they can
afford.
So,
absolutely. Yeah. They think, oh, I make, you know, $5,000 a month. I can afford a $5,000 a month rent.
Right.
You probably are going to want to turn on your lights every once in a while.
Right.
There's some stuff like that you need to take into account.
Sure.
So the 40% on the back end ratio is what we really like to see. And the lower the number, the better.
Okay. All right. And now the number one thing, let me get a little drum roll here. And all right. So tell us the number one thing.
Having too big of a heart.
Too big of a heart. That's good. That's good. Yep. So you gotta be firm. The rents do.
Establish your rules and enforce them on yourself and on your property. You know, and that's where a lot of people, oh, I'll let this go this month. Nope. Your rules are your rules. Mm-hmm. If you set a credit rule of 625 and up and they have a 624, but they make $400 million a year, stick to your rules.
Right.
Stick to your rules.
And if you can't stick to it, that's probably a great reason to get a property manager, right? Like if someone has too big of a heart, you got to get a tough manager to get in there and make sure you get paid. All right. Well, it's time now for the lightning round. So we've been on a pretty hot streak here. We've had a few people that have gotten it in 60 seconds. So do you want to take the challenge and get it in 60 seconds, or do you think you want some more time?
I will give it a shot for 60 seconds.
Okay, well, let's do it.
Now, the Rental Income Podcast Lightning Round. 5 rapid-fire questions and answers in 60 seconds.
All right, the first question is, what's your favorite real estate book?
I like Hold by Gary Keller, the founder of Keller Williams.
Number two, the number one fear that I hear from people all the time on why they don't want to own a rental property is they don't want to get a call at 3 a.m. that a toilet's clogged. As a property manager, have you ever gotten this call?
Yes, many times.
Okay.
If you self-manage, you'll get the call too.
Number three, if you had a property sitting vacant for 6 months, you had a renter apply that had horrible credit and a spotty work history, would you take a chance on them and rent to them or let the property sit?
I would let the property sit until the proper tenant that actually can afford it has good job history and income, because having an eviction is much worse than having another extra couple months of vacancy.
If you could give one piece of advice to a new landlord, what would it be?
Set your rules for yourself and your property early and follow them.
Would you rent a property to your best friend?
If he can pass the screening application.
Oh my God, you got it. Oh, just nice. Right before the buzzer. Great job.
Good.
That's awesome. Well, John, why don't you tell us how we can reach out to you and how we can learn more about your company?
Yeah. So the company's name is Property Management Inc. of Fairfax. The website is www.pmiofairfax.com. And my email is John, J-O-H-N, at pmiofairfax.com.
John, thank you so much for coming on the show. That was just some awesome information that you gave us today. If anybody wants to learn more about how to get started buying rental properties, I've put together a 3-part video training that walks you through everything you need to know to get started buying rentals. If you want to take the class, it's totally free. Just go to rentalcourse.com and you can take the class right there. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.